Good morning. We are here on case 11-0019, Alvin D. Jackson, Ohio Department of Health versus Bartek Incorporated et al. For the appellants, Mr. Thompson.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Maurice Thompson with the 1851 Center. I represent Richard Allen, who's owned and operated Bartek Incorporated, doing business at Zeno's Victorian Village for 27 years in the Columbus area. In this case, Your Honors, you're faced with two critical choices in our eyes. One, will the Court protect the fundamental right to own and use property, or will it essentially unleash a police power completely untethered from nuisance principles that knows essentially no limit? And secondly, will it protect Ohioans from agencies that take the law into their own hands and make a standard that is above and beyond the standard articulated in the policy or in the legislation that they're enforcing? I'd like to address the first issue first, the second, and then as to the procedural issues, I will take questions from the Court as it necessitates, as the declaratory judgment, et cetera. As a background, we have to note that this is a – oh, I'd also like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honors. This is a land use restriction. This is not a restriction on conduct. So this is a restriction on property. The smoking ban in Ohio only applies to non-exempt properties falling within the definition of public places or places of employment. The ban does not prohibit smoking per se. What it does is simply reshuffles the property on which smoking can occur. And while there are no exceptions for some easily avoidable establishments where smoking occurs, such as bars, there are numerous exemptions for retail tobacco stores, hotels, motels, family-owned businesses, nursing homes, private clubs. So a place like Zeno's, even though it has a separate room, separately ventilated room where people could smoke, and even though smoking is a fundamental use in its business, past business practice, is not exempt from the ban. So,
well, how is this different from, if you're saying this is a land use and it's basically telling customers what they can or cannot do that are using your property, how is this different than a company that has rules that regulate how workplace safety, you have to use this type of equipment, you have to have these safety guards, those are all things that apply to the use of the property, but yet they protect public safety and the workers' safety. How is that different?
Your Honor, one critical difference is that this is essentially a spot regulation of that use. So,
what do you mean by a spot regulation?
Well, what I mean by that, Your Honor, is that the Department of Health, for example, argues that this is unlike or is much like the regulations that you reference or food preparation regulations or building code regulations. One of the differences, of course, is those are hidden dangers, but another is that those are nuisance, considered nuisances per se wherever you find them. So it's not that this is a nuisance in one kind of a business owner's property, but not a nuisance in another kind of business owner's property. Those are essentially regulations of conduct. If you want to engage in this kind of business, then you have to, you know, you have to
abide by this kind of use. If you want to build a building, wherever you build a building, your scaffolding has to have these safety guards. It applies to every single construction site. How is that different?
Well, that's right, Your Honor. And the smoking ban does not. It exempts bars that have only family members working there. It exempts bars that are private clubs. It exempts a number of other locations. So this applies in some places, but not in others.
If you're working on your own house, you don't have to follow the OSHA instructions. If you have family members come over to work on your house, so I'm still not seeing the difference.
Well, the difference, Your Honor, is this is strictly a regulation of some property, but not others. And that's what really makes this a property rights issue. This is not a regulation of conduct. So, for example, the ban does not prohibit smoking. It doesn't say that you cannot smoke anywhere. It says that you cannot smoke at Zeno's and you cannot smoke at a number of other places. And in fact, it exempts, it allows for smoking at places where there's an economic hardship, such as retail tobacco stores, but doesn't allow for smoking at other places where there could be a similar economic hardship. And it allows smoking in places where there could be children, even though a place like Zeno's does not have children. So it's a little bit like spot zoning. That's what I meant when I used the term spot. So it really is a regulation of property more so than a regulation of conduct. Smoking.
So Zeno's family can't come in for dinner and bring their kids along?
Well, you have to be 21 to enter Zeno's, Your Honor. That's their policy.
So they don't serve food there?
There is some serving of food at Zeno's, Your Honor, but it's peripheral. The record indicates that 93% of Zeno's revenue comes from on-site liquor consumption.
So a neighborhood family can't bring their kids in there and have a sandwich?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Along the lines that Justice Stratton was asking, the legislature has also chosen to regulate concealed firearms. And they've said, you know, if you go through the training, you can have a concealed firearm. And then they've told cities, we've had cases on that, that you can't keep people with concealed firearms out of your parks, for example. How is this a different and more overreaching regulation than what the legislature has chosen to do in the area of firearms?
Well, Your Honor, I'd say, first of all, we're talking about purely private property. So for example, with the banning of smoking, we have no objection, and we couldn't have an objection, to the notion that smoking, the state has the capacity to ban smoking in any kind of public space, parks, sidewalks, and in fact, anywhere where children could be and couldn't knowingly and voluntarily assume this risk. The prior law is actually interesting on concealed carry, and for the procedural end of this case, under the old concealed carry law, it was the person who brought the gun into the establishment that was responsible for the crime. And here on the other end, this would be like holding the bar owner liable the second that somebody with a gun walks into the establishment, even if it was concealed. So that's important for the procedural end. On the other end, one of the things that is important in this case is that this is a place where smoking and drinking has gone hand in hand for 27 years since the establishment's been open. Smoking there is a pre-existing use of the property as opposed to anything having to do with firearms, and in fact has considerably added to Zeno's bottom line, and the absence of smoking has considerably hurt their bottom line, in fact wiped out all of their profits, and that's in the record, Your Honor. So I think that is an important use. You know, I think we all pretty much know that.
But none of their customers can go to another bar or restaurant bar and smoke in Ohio. Is that correct?
Well, that's not entirely correct, Your Honor. There is an outdoor patio exemption, so they can go to a bar that has a patio. Zeno's is a particular hardship here because they're located on a corner block in an urban area, and there's no way for them to have an outdoor patio. They'd have to get an exemption from the city. They had tried to do that but weren't able to get that. So that does render them in greater hardship than an average bar that may have an outdoor patio. So that is a significant difference.
Counsel, the information that you're bringing up is important and interesting, but I'd like to address the procedural challenges that you face here with regards to this. Now, my understanding is that they were cited and levied a fine of, was it $33,000?
That's approximately correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And that there was, in that administrative process, there was no representation pursuant to those charges. Is that correct?
Well, there were a number of fines, Your Honor. 10 fines are at issue in this case. So there was a challenge as to the evidence on the first two.
The first two, but there was no constitutional challenge leveled with the application of these citations, of the 10 citations, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. And importantly, there is no constitutional challenge as applied to those 10 citations in this case. That is what the appellate court would lead you to believe, but that is not our argument here. One of the reasons that the unwritten policy, the strict liability policy, wasn't challenged in those cases is because this was very early on in the enforcement, and the bar owners didn't know about this policy so as to challenge it in those cases.
Didn't know about what policy?
The strict liability policy that we're arguing exists in this case, Your Honor, whereby
where the bar owner is on the hook no matter what's happening and no matter what efforts he or she has used to deter or deter smoking in their establishment.
Correct, Your Honor. It wasn't until the middle of 2009 when the Department of Health essentially admitted that it had this strict liability policy and arguing its position in Poorhouse.
But it wasn't a written policy. Is that, that's one of your...
Your Honor, it's essentially an unwritten policy. The strict liability policy is unwritten. Now, they've argued it in their briefs, so you see it written down in some places. And I would argue what you could see is that some parts of the policy, are, though unwritten, are supported by other written parts of the policy. And what I mean by that is that, for example, the Department of Health wrote itself a regulation.
But given your particular situation, what I think I hear you say is that you didn't realize at the time that the 10 original citations were issued that the department never cited smokers, always cited bar owners. Is that what you're telling us?
That's right, Your Honor. We actually had to get into discovery in this case to examine the chief legal counsel of the Department of Health, to examine the investigators.
And that happened at the common pleas level. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. There was a full trial at the common pleas level, Your Honor, with powers that we wouldn't have in the administrative review process. The subpoena power, the ability to do discovery, to bring in an expert witness, all these things we could not have done through the administrative review process, which only allows you to examine the evidence underlying the particular violation there, which is one of the reasons that Zeno's didn't pursue those claims, because they were concerned about the overall policy and the constitutionality of how this is enforced, the entire thing, and they were continually being cited for the same thing and continually would have had to hire a lawyer and appeal case by case, piecemeal, you know, thousands of dollars a pop.
In their particular situation, even, you know, allegedly not knowing that this was the standard course of conduct for the Department of Health in these citations, from what I understand from the record is that they used all precautions that they could, according to how they were instructed. They had no ashtrays. They had, you know, the policy of non-smoking, although they were cited for not having signs displayed. Do they dispute that?
No, they didn't, Your Honor. And that's not in dispute in this case.
Okay, so they're using all their efforts possible, except for the posting of signs, to say you can't smoke in this bar, right? And then people continued to smoke, and they weren't aware that they had to have been aware that they were being cited and their patrons weren't being cited.
They were definitely aware of that.
They were aware of that at the administrative level, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so is it dependent on how this policy is applied or universally, or how it's applied to your clients?
Your Honor, I think the universal application is what's important here, because what we're challenging is essentially more, this is very complicated, but it's essentially more like a facial challenge to an unwritten policy that has been universally applied. There have been over 33,000 citations of proprietors, business owners in Ohio, zero citations of the smoker, even though we have two co-equal sections of the law, one prohibiting the business owner from permitting smoking, and another saying that once the business owner has asked the patron to discontinue smoking, that patron must, in fact, discontinue. The Department of Health has, in fact, never used that division of the law, even though it is co-equal, and would seem to suggest that there is a safe harbor for proprietors who follow the law.
But the Department of Health could cite the smoker, could it not?
Your Honor, the Department of Health could definitely cite the smoker. In fact,
and it only has chosen to cite the bar owners.
They've chosen to only cite the bar owners. Their position is that the bar owners must prohibit smoking, and that anytime smoking is present in the establishment, that's automatically a fine for the bar owner. They don't even investigate whether the smoker continued to smoke once asked to stop.
What does a bar owner do when a patron chooses to smoke and the owner says you can't do that?
Your Honor, the bar owner does what the statute requires, which is, one, post no smoking signs, two, pull anything that's a traditional ashtray from the establishment, and three, ask people to stop smoking or inform them of the ban. At that point, the statute isn't clear on what they have to do. Now, the health department added to the requirements or the liabilities on proprietor, which I think is also beyond the scope of the statute, saying the bar owner must take reasonable steps. But they've never clarified what reasonable steps mean. Their legal counsel says that means.
How does Poorhouse apply to this? And I assume are you using the term strict liability policy as strictly citing the proprietor as opposed to ever citing the patron, or are you using as they need no proof that the proprietor is not permitting smoking?
When I use the term strict liability policy, Your Honor, what I mean here is that the Department of Health does what it admits it does in the evidence of this case and what the trial court said that it does,
which is
it walks into the bar, it sees smoking, it automatically decides that's a citation for the proprietor, $5,000, and then it puts the burden, as it describes in its poorhouse briefing, it puts the burden on the proprietor to initiate an administrative appeal and essentially prove its innocence once smoking is present.
And what does poorhouse say that has to be demonstrated before the proprietor would not be fined?
Well, that's essentially the crux of the case. It's a little bit unclear, Your Honor, but what poorhouse says is it just recites the statute, which says post no smoking signs, pull ashtrays, and ask these patrons not to stop. At that point, the Department of Health needs to investigate whether that's occurred and then do further investigation if the proprietor has asked patrons not to stop. That's all the statute actually requires.
But your clients didn't have the signs posted.
In the first, they were cited initially. I believe their warning was for no signs. They immediately then put up signs. So all of the transcript is fairly clear, Your Honor, that Zenos has enforced the policy. It has done all of the things that I just mentioned. They put up the signs, they pulled ashtrays, and they had a policy, and it was witnessed being enforced, of asking patrons not to stop smoking. And the trial court also made that factual finding.
But they did not contest. They did not contest the other citations, I guess, then, right? So those are all essentially concluded. And so there has been no case in which they have actually put in evidence as to what they did, and the patron continued to smoke. That issue has never been quite joined yet, has it?
Your Honor, I would disagree with that characterization, because in this case at the trial court, we did that. We have a trial transcript. We had depositions of the proprietor. The proprietor testified. The general manager of Zenos, his son, also testified.
But this is not a new citation, right? This is an action to enforce the previous citations.
That's not entirely correct, Your Honor. This is an action for an injunction that 3794.09D allows the Department of Health to bring an injunctive action to require Zenos to follow the law. What Zenos is responding with is, we have been following the law, we are following the law, and you're continuing to cite us anyway, and this needs to be cleared up. And this is not just about those 10 prior violations. This is about enjoying this policy that the Department of Health has now and going forward, because this is $33,000 over 2 years.
This is a defensive action, correct? So you don't want the injunction for them to follow the law, or you want the law clarified as to what it is they have to do to not be in violation of the law?
Your Honor, we were required to bring our declaratory relief in this case also under Civil Rules 12 and 13, and so we did that. We've asked for a declaration that the Department of Health's policy is unconstitutional as it exceeds the limited authority they have. We've also asked for a declaration that, because this is a pre-existing continued use that is not a nuisance, hasn't been declared a nuisance, that this exceeds the state's police power. So we're entitled to a declaratory relief on both of those. Now, if you find for us in either of those, only incidentally, peripherally, would you then go on to consider whether the citations issued under this policy or under this law should then be abrogated, and that's when the Sunburst Doctrine applies, or Civil Rule 60B5 applies if the court does not want to consider the issue directly.
Counsel, you used the term pre-existing use. That's a zoning term, isn't it?
Your Honor, it's a property regulation term. It's applied in zoning cases, but it's also applied in cases that are not zoning cases. This court has stated throughout cases in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s that when you have a use that the property owner has engaged in, and you take that use away, the police power is to abate nuisances. So you've got to have a nuisance. And there's no declaration of nuisance here, and nor could there be, because it can't be a nuisance at Zeno's property but not on another property. And if you look at the standard for a nuisance, you simply don't have that. You have people voluntarily choosing to go and consume alcohol at Zeno's. They can take it, they can leave it. That's not a nuisance. That's not imposing anything or legally invading the rights of another. It's quite the opposite of that. It's coming to the nuisance if there even were one, but of course there's not.
What is our standard of review here? Is it a strict scrutiny or is it a rational relationship as we look at the state's law and its application?
Your Honor, that is an excellent question. What this court held in Norwood is that private property rights are fundamental rights, and the Ohio Constitution does allow for greater protection of private property rights than the federal Constitution. The rational basis review test has no place in this litigation whatsoever. Because the court has held that there's a fundamental right, and elsewhere the court has said that when it comes to fundamental rights, we apply heightened scrutiny. Now, whether that's strict scrutiny or something akin to strict scrutiny, we don't quite know yet. But I would also add that in Norwood, the court stated it's not just the right to own property that's a fundamental right, but it's also the right to use and enjoy property. And that's important because ownership, as you all know, in that case, there's a Lockean view of property rights in the Constitution. The court acknowledged that. We have a bundle of rights and property. Ownership is only one stick in that bundle, and ownership is awfully irrelevant if you can't also use your property in a gainful way, and that's what we have here.
So is the smoking ban, are you talking about it as it applies to every private bar? I mean, you talk about the exemptions that are for clubs and so on. Would you go so far as to say the ban would be unconstitutional as applied to every private bar because it's private property?
Your Honor, I don't think that we have to go that far in this case. In this as-applied context, what we know about Zeno's is that there are never any children there, that it's 21 and up. What we know is that traditionally they've had smoking there and it's gone hand in hand, and their profits been wiped out by this. We have that in the record. I think you would need to have that with any bar in order to find the ban inoperative as against that bar. And that's how you would deal with it, by the way. You would, as this court did in Rescala, it would find the ban inoperative as against an establishment like Zeno's. It wouldn't have to strike any part of the statute.
Thank you. Ms. Long?
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I'd like to start off by trying to discuss the standard of review for police power regulations, because I think there's a bit of confusion there. For one thing, the language of rational basis and strict scrutiny really has no place in evaluating whether a law is within the scope of a state's police power or not. Instead, this court applies the Benjamin test, which is a deferential standard of review, and looks only to whether that public health or other police power regulation bears a legitimate and substantial relationship to the goal asserted and is not unreasonable or arbitrary. And in articulating that test, the Benjamin Court, in the sentence immediately prior to that test, specifically observed that nearly every regulation under the police power is going to interfere with the enjoyment of liberty or property. Thus, when the court articulated this test, it recognized that it was using a deferential standard in spite of the fact that almost every police power regulation is going to somehow implicate private property rights. And Zeno's attempt here to import the language from Norwood, referring to fundamental property rights in the context of an outright taking, using the state's eminent domain power to physically seize and take someone's private property, does not just transfer into the context of the standard for evaluating a police power regulation on its face. Instead, what would happen is this court would apply the deferential standard of Benjamin, evaluate whether a police power regulation meets that test, and then if a property owner in an instance like this had a claim that perhaps this law, they allege that it amounts to a regulatory taking of their own property, then that it would be analyzed separately under the takings clause. But we can't import the language of strict scrutiny, equal protection, or this takings analysis into the most fundamental question of whether the state has the police power to enact a regulation.
Does our decision in Horney and the idea that in Ohio property rights, private property rights, are fundamental, which is different than the, you know, than nationally. We have declared that. Does that in any way affect the police power when it is applied to private property?
Your Honor, Norwood did not adjust the test for the police power at all. Saying that property rights are fundamental for the purpose of eminent domain or taking analysis, and indeed saying that property rights are fundamental in Ohio is not so novel. Ohio has always had great respect for property rights.
But the idea here is what government can do to an establishment that is pre-existing, as counsel is pointing out, where people can drink and smoke if they're over 21. The government coming in saying now you are not going to be able to do that, and unless you're a private club or you're exempt in some other way.
And in the Horney case, the court did step in and recognize that there's a higher standard in Ohio than nationally, but that says nothing about the police power. And if the court were to refashion its test for police power regulations in such a way as to apply some form of heightened scrutiny, as Zenos is advocating, that would essentially lead to the future invalidation of countless laws that have been enacted to regulate the public health, safety, and general welfare.
Counsel, isn't the difference and counsel for the bar in this case has very skillfully guided this over to a public takings kind of thing. But we're talking about establishments that are licensed by the state of Ohio. Zenos has a very valuable liquor license. It is, if they serve food, they're regulated by the health department. These rules do not reach into one's home or other places where we consider private property rights. They reach only into establishments that are open to the public. Is that not the case?
That is the case, Your Honor. And in fact, that also goes on to support an additional point that the state would like to make, which is that proprietors are held responsible for the conduct that goes on in their establishments in other contexts as well, such as under the liquor laws. Proprietors are responsible for making sure that patrons do not become overly intoxicated or start behaving in improper ways, or making
or
sure
if they
don't
come in
them.
And they have a really great set of fake IDs and they're 17 years old and get served alcohol because the proprietor of Zenos or any other bar did everything you could humanly do to make sure they weren't serving underage, but in fact do. Strict liability, isn't it?
Yes, I believe that is, Your Honor. Now, here we are not actually advocating a strict liability standard, and I'll move over to Zeno's enforcement challenge here for a moment, because basically Zeno's separation of powers challenge can't even get off the ground because there's no evidence that the alleged enforcement policy even exists. There are a lot of things going on in Zeno's allegations about what that enforcement policy is, but at its most basic level, it seems to be an allegation that ODH and its more than 90 designees go into bars and cite when smoke is merely present and look for evidence of nothing more. That simply isn't the case. ODH's only regulations as to enforcement of the Smoke-Free Workplace Act are found in the Administrative Code. And following the language of the statute, the Administrative Code at 3701.5202A says a proprietor shall not permit smoking in these venues. The department interprets not permit in accord with its plain common sense meaning, and it looks for evidence not just of smoke being present, but something more, such as an indication that a proprietor should have been aware that smoking was going on or reasonably should have taken additional steps.
Reasonable steps include having the bouncer remove somebody that refuses to stop smoking?
Absolutely, Your Honor, they could. And not every
so
establishment
that's
will
what,
have a
that's
bouncer.
What the state would require in order for the proprietor not to be found in violation of the smoking ban? You have to have the bouncer remove a patron who refuses to stop smoking, even if they're requested to do so?
The state does not have a fixed policy on exactly what steps must be taken on any case. Instead, it applies and investigates on a case-by-case basis to determine what was reasonable under the circumstances. So in some cases, it
may... Has any proprietor not been found liable that has been cited so far?
If you mean, have violations been dismissed? Yes, and ODH itself has dismissed violations when they come up on administrative appeal if it reviews the evidence and sees that there really isn't evidence of much more than smoke.
But, counsel, what about the information that we've received that 33,000 citations have been issued to bar owners and zero to smoking patrons. Is that true?
Yes, Your Honor, that is true. And I think that's explained by a few simple points, first of which is that Ohioans generally have been very respectful of this law, which they enacted by an overwhelming majority. And when they're in an establishment where a proprietor asks them to stop smoking, they generally do. There's also the fact that ODH has never received a tip on the tip line referring them to a violation by a specific patron. So there's never been an occasion where ODH has been called to go out and investigate a specific patron. Further, and more important, the statute itself sets a higher threshold for patron liability than proprietor liability. A patron is only liable for a violation if they have been warned by the proprietor to stop smoking.
And is a sign posted a warning?
A sign posted is not a warning for purposes of that. That is a separate requirement under the Act, under 3794.06.
But getting back to, you say that a complaint triggers a visit by the enforcement agents. How soon does that enforcement agent visit on a complaint?
It varies. I think initially it seems from looking at the record that it used to take a little bit longer to get an investigation. It might vary by which health district is investigating, but certainly days, it could be weeks.
Days or weeks.
Yes.
Okay, so they come to an establishment and they say on, you know, March 1st, we got a complaint that somebody was in your bar smoking. And then what happens? What's the investigatory process then?
What the investigator is doing when they enter the bar is actually observing to see whether there's evidence of any current violation. So they're looking for the presence of smoke or ashtrays or a failure to post the signs. And while there, if an investigator did see a proprietor ask a patron to stop smoking and the patron refused, then the investigator would be in a position to cite that patron. But there's no evidence on the record, at least the only evidence we really have about specific cases is with respect to Zeno's violations. There's no evidence that the proprietor ever said a word to patrons while investigators were in the establishment. And moving over briefly to Mr. Thompson's argument that if the court agrees with him on his constitutional claims, somehow it can reach back and undo these 10 final orders that are prior violations and the fines that accompanying them, there's simply no basis for that. That would be a collateral attack on otherwise final orders. And in fact, even if Zeno's could prove that the alleged enforcement policy exists now, which the record does not support at all, there's no indication that that was applied as to Zeno's. In fact,
okay, let me get back to the enforcement process here, because I'm familiar with liquor enforcement, and a complaint is leveled against a particular bar, and then the agents will go there undercover or send an agent undercover, for example, a 17-year-old if it's an allegation of underage drinking, and then wait to see what happens through observation, maybe an evening, maybe several evenings. If it's a drive-through, you send, you know, folks through the drive-through that are underage with fake IDs. And it's an effort to see what the pattern or what the response is of the proprietor. Are you telling me that's what happened in this case?
No, Your Honor. All of the investigations that were occurred were in response to specific complaints.
Okay, so a complaint was filed. They sent then agents into Zeno's. They sat there for a while and observed smoking going on and the proprietors not asking the smoker to stop smoking.
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct. Even if one investigator or a particular designee, even if Mr. Thompson could point to evidence of a specific problematic violation where someone did cite for the mere presence of smoke, that's the very purpose of administrative appeals and all the due process that the Act affords to proprietors and the regulations. Proprietors are asked to volunteer this information even before an investigation begins. They get a letter notifying them that a complaint has been filed, and they're asked to provide information that might explain the situation. Then at the investigation, they have another opportunity to provide this information and can again administratively appeal. it's inappropriate that Zeno's sat on these 10 violations for all this time, and then when faced with ODH's action for a statutory injunction here, based on those repeat violations, then raise these claims, which now Mr. Thompson is maintaining are purely facial.
So in each one of these cases, it's not triggered by a patron alone complaining. It is an actual citation triggered by an agent of ODH witnessing this.
Yes. There is never a violation issued based on an anonymous complaint. Every time it is followed up with an investigation must occur before a violation is found.
If I understand the action of the trial court, these fines were vacated, am I right?
The trial court held that the initial violations were void and vacated the fines.
Okay, and did it also make a determination that the citations were issued without determining whether or not the staff had asked patrons to stop?
Yes, and
is that a finding by the trial court?
That is a finding, and Mr. Collins did testify that he did not ask that particular question.
Well, are we bound by the trial court finding in that regard?
We don't dispute the trial court's finding that Mr. Collins, the investigator, did not ask that particular question of the proprietor before issuing.
During the colloquy you had with Chief Justice, I thought you said that the issuance of the citations was predicated on the fact that investigators had come to the establishment and observed patrons smoking and no one asking them not to smoke.
That's correct.
Well, if the trial court made a finding that the citations were issued without determining that finding.
I see what you're saying. I think, as I understand it, the trial court's finding is that the investigators did not ask whether Mr. Allen had asked these patrons to stop smoking before they arrived to find out whether the smoking had continued in spite of the proprietor's warning. But I don't think that Zeno's is contesting the fact that the investigator did not see and Mr. Allen or any of his employees ask these patrons to stop smoking while the investigator was in the establishment.
Is that what's at the core of the citations, the fact that the Zeno employees do not approach patrons and insist that they extinguish cigarettes?
Well, that's certainly part of the evidence as to any of these one things, but the record as
but
to these
But the evidence was contrary to that because the court made a finding that they didn't.
But again, the underlying merits of these 10 violations should not have been at issue at all in this collateral appeal. Moreover, 9 of the 10 violations also cited Zeno's for having ashtrays present, and 8 of which would have been a separate violation unto itself, and there's been no dispute made as to the presence of ashtrays. And 8 of the 10 violations cited Zeno's for intentionally violating the act, which suggests that the investigator found more than just the presence of smoke or even some pure inaction, but an affirmative.
And those are findings by the trial court?
No, I'm speaking to the nature of those violations itself. The trial court was not in a position where it should have been making any findings of fact as to the merits of the underlying violations at all. If Zeno's is sticking to the arguments it's making now, its arguments in this case are only facial challenges to the constitutionality of the act itself and ODH's enforcement, not as to the circumstances of its particular violations.
What about the fact that Zeno's did not make a constitutional challenge as applied in the administrative process? Does that have a bearing on our decision?
Yes, to the extent Zeno's is attempting to pursue any kind of as-applied relief here, that should be barred. It did not exhaust that remedy administratively. It exhausted administrative remedies with respect to that claim. In the 2 cases that it did administratively appeal, Zeno's did appeal those administrative affirmances of the violation to the Common Pleas Court, and it did raise those challenges in its papers with Common Pleas Court, but then it never filed briefs. And so in both cases, the Common Pleas Court affirmed the findings of ODH, and so Zeno's didn't ever pursue those arguments to its conclusion.
So what you're saying is that the right to contest any of those 10 violations was extinguished by their lack of activity in the Common Pleas Court, and then to come back later and saying, guess what, we just found out that 33,000 citations have been issued to bar owners and 0 to patrons, we're being treated unfairly, is not ripe for us to even be investigating, or I mean, entertaining at this point.
That's correct, Your Honor. This court can't reopen final administrative orders and allow collateral attacks. That would wreak havoc on the administrative state and really upset some fundamental principles of law about what's a proper use of a declaratory judgment action.
M60B5 would not apply as well, then.
That's correct. Although this court hasn't expressly ruled on it, many of the lower appeals courts have addressed the issue and said 60B has no place in administrative proceedings, and it certainly wouldn't be appropriate for this court to order that kind of relief as to an administrative proceeding. I see that my time has expired.
Thank you.
We'd ask that the court approve the case.
Mr. Thompson, you have far exceeded your time. I'll give you 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. As to the property rights issue, Norwood is not a dead letter as applied to the use of property. And, in fact, this court has longstanding precedent, whether it's Direct Plumbing or Correll, all the way through Norwood, through Rescala. It's fairly clear that the police power is limited, and it is limited by this nuisance principle that we've articulated. As to the enforcement issues, Your Honor, the testimony, the trial court did make factual findings that there was no investigation prior to imposing fines on Zeno's. There was no asking of whether or not the patrons were asked to stop smoking. And opposing counsel,
is the transcript from the trial court in the record?
The transcript from the trial court is in the record, as well as the depositions of their own people, Your Honor. And their own enforcement expert, who they proffered under Civil Rule 30B, explicitly stated on page 26 of her deposition, she witnesses smoking and then finds the proprietor, immediately goes to tell the proprietor they're being fined because she sees smoking, and this is how it is done throughout Ohio.
Thank you.
This is corroborated by the rest of their witnesses.
Thank you very much. Counsel, thank you. We are concluded with this case. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision.